Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you five topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got five on it. Number one.
Five on it here with Rahimi and Harris. It is Mark Grody. It is Marshall Harris. We got five questions for you. Question number one. What was the most surprising move the Bears made on roster cutdown day?
So we have to. So one. We can only do one.
Yeah, I think that's the like. What was okay. the most? Okay. It's a superlative. I don't know if you know how this works. It means one's got to be above the rest.
Yeah, I got you, superlative guy. You know, I'm going to say relative to the beginning of the season, and I get it. He earned the spot. So at the end of the day, it's not necessarily surprising. But Jahdae Walker making this team is a big deal. We have seen. You have watched Bears football enough through the years, those of you listening here on the Rahimi and Harris show for sure, to know that there has been many a times when we have seen wide receivers flourish during training camp, and there have been great stories of guys, and then cut down day comes and they're like the first person cut. It's like Chicago losing the Olympics. Like, we're all excited about it, we're fascinated, infrastructure is going to be fixed, and then Chicago is immediately dismissed from contention. That's what usually happens. Like, I was a little surprised that Walker still made it as a sixth wide receiver, by the way, on this team. So I will say Walker as my surprise and an honorable mention, and maybe this is personal, and I think it's personal for a lot of people. Doug Kramer did not survive. Now, he might come back on the practice squad. Doug Kramer is my U of I guy. Last year, Dan Wiederer and I, co-host on the Take the North podcast, were in an elevator at Soldier Field heading up, and two older people got onto the elevator, and they said, "Oh, it's Mark Grody." And it was Doug Kramer's grandparents, and I have Dan Wiederer as my witness. They are fans of The Score. They are fans of me, and so I am a fan of Doug Kramer. It's a family thing.
Did they
Marshall.
Say Bears? Did they police say? Well, did police tell me they said Bears?
I don't necessarily remember that. I might have said Bears, but they were very, very excited.
He did the bit. He did the bit.
He said it
in real life.
He said it again. So Bears. So shout out to Doug Kramer. Shout out to Cubs. Doug Kramer's grandparents.
White
Hope
Sox.
You're all doing well.
Bears. All right, so that's yours.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the fact that Karan Amagaji is still on this team, because I wasn't sure. Ryan Poles has had some issues, and I was like, is this going to be the dagger on Ryan Poles? Like, not a dagger that kills him, but a dagger that certainly makes us go, huh, Ben Johnson wasn't a fan of that Karan Amagaji thing. So,
yeah.
But they're giving time for a second-year player to develop. And I guess it goes in concert with, I was wondering if Theo Benedet was for real. And the fact that he's off the practice squad, now on the 53-man roster, means he's for real. But it also means that one of Poles' guys that was very questionable is going to get a chance. Although, I don't know that he's ever going to play tackle again for the Bears. He may just be a guard for the Bears and an emergency tackle.
The Tevin Jenkins plan?
And so that's concerning, right? Because you drafted him in the third round as a tackle.
However, the Tevin Jenkins, what, second round pick? Drafted to be the replacement, essentially, to Charles Leno Jr. They moved him inside and he thrived. So, I mean, like...
But you need tackles.
That wasn't the idea.
But you need tackles.
You're right. It's default. There's no doubt.
Default's not good.
No.
When you're talking about Ryan Poles and his track record, and I a year from now, I'm interested to see how many 2023 and 2022 players there are still left on this roster. Let me tell you, it won't be many.
real quick, low key, before we get on to the next question. I was a little surprised Ian Wheeler was cut. Now, he might make it back to the practice squad, I would imagine. But
I think that's what's going to happen.
I just like what I see out of him in terms of the speed factor. So, so he could be back. Who did we have earlier that's back with the Bears?
I know that JP Richardson.
Thank you.
JP Richardson, he's on the practice squad.
There you go. See, there's the example of the wide receiver who was good in camp that everybody kind of liked early on, and they couldn't cut him fast enough. But they bring him back.
But it faded. It faded quickly.
It did, actually.
Richardson.
It's a great point.
Five on it. Number two.
Is there a chance Braxton Jones isn't the Bears' starting left tackle?
So you're saying there's a chance? Yeah, of course there's a chance. they could determine that Braxton Jones isn't where he needs to be from a recovery from the injury. That sound you got with him in the locker room really told me a lot about where he is and where he thinks he is. And of course, he's basically saying, guys, it's not like I'm not trying out here, but I've been dealing with this, that, and the other.
It's like this and like that? Is that what you're saying?
And like that, Anna.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So, yes, I could see a possibility of him not starting, but I expect him to start because Ozzie Trapillo, not that he's been a disappointment, but they may have put a little too much dip on their proverbial chip in terms of what expectations were for week one as a rookie who played almost all of his college football at Boston College at right tackle and expecting him to be able to just quickly convert to left tackle. It did not work out that way.
Yeah, and again, I give the Bears credit for that, even though it kind of sucks that the rookie, the guy that drafted in the second round, is for now out of the competition at left tackle. But I appreciate the fact that the Bears have been real about it and not tried to force anybody in because of where they were drafted and who they are. Here's what I think. I think Braxton Jones will be the starting left tackle, but they, and this is kind of like reading between the lines, they're saying if it ain't good enough, then be ready for plan two, which appears to be Theo Benedict. I'm trying to figure out how far are they taking this Theo Benedict thing, and are they actually considering the possibility? Because I mean, we have to consider that because they did not want to name the starter yesterday. I think that was because they don't want to give the satisfaction to the players right now because they have not, nobody has done good enough. So I don't think they wanted to be like, yep, Braxton Jones is our guy. I think they're going to do it in a much more low-key fashion, and we'll find out 24 hours before the game that Braxton Jones is a starting left tackle.
Nah, see, I disagree with that. I don't think we're going to find out 24 hours before the game because I think once game plan for Minnesota starts, you're going to see with your own eyes who's out there with the first team, and I don't think that player is going to rotate in the week of the game.
Yeah.
You need the real reps leading up to a game. And I think whoever is out there at left tackle, and I expect it fully to be Braxton Jones, is going to get the week one start. But I think you are right in saying no one deserves the satisfaction this far out of being named the starter. I'll say this. Their attempt to get Ozzie Trapillo to play left tackle coming out of college, it's very much like when you see a garbage can and you've got a wadded up piece of paper and you yell Kobe and you let that thing fly and it hits off the front of the rim, does not go in. Now you go back, you get it, you pick it up and you put it in the trash can. They yelled Kobe. The wad did not go in the trash can, but now they're trying to pick it up and gently.
Haven't we been told to avoid Marshall's analogies? Isn't that in the show?
Yeah,
open?
Guess what? They're coming anyway. Full speed ahead.
With slobber. Yeah. With slobber.
Well, yeah, that's an analogy as well.
Five on it. Number three.
Question number three of five on it. Mark Grody. Marshall Harris. Third question.
Uh-huh.
Listener, what is the least amount of wins the Bears can have in order to have a successful season?
Oh, look at your face.
I know. I know. Well,
you just told me a few segments ago, you said something about the number five.
Okay. I'll say the least amount of wins the Bears could have this year to remain successful. The reason that I'm pausing here is because I have to go with my initial statement from the beginning of the show. And that is, to me, a successful season is knowing that you have the quarterback, which was the measure last year for me, too. That was how I evaluated the Chicago Bears last year, too. Do you know at the end of the season that you have a quarterback that's going to be around for the next 7 to 10 years and hopefully for his entire career? So I think I would be okay with 6 wins if I know.
Ooh,
that.
You're comfortable with that?
I know. Well, you guys are. Look, it is by nature, it is a cynical question, which is not going to elicit many optimistic answers, right? We're talking about what is the least amount of wins the Bears can have this year, right? So I will say it. 6, if I know that the quarterback is going to be good. I would doubt that the Bears would only win 6 games if the quarterback is good, though.
Going back to that opening thesis, it's not just about the quarterback. I need to know that he is the franchise quarterback. I also need to know that the head coach can coach, as in head coach, not just offensive play caller.
Oh, you don't like Ben Johnson?
Nope, that's not what I said. And see, here you go.
I wrote that down. It's on record.
Start in trouble.
Put that down in five on it for tomorrow.
I think the two are intertwined, and I think there's a possibility that success means more than 6 wins because Ben Johnson should be able to get him a win or two. Like, my whole thing is this. First four games, win two games. Find a way. Just find a way to win two of the first four games, no matter how bad your team looks. Other teams will be going through growing pains as well. First-time head coach in Dallas, correct?
Yes.
You have a new head coach in Las Vegas. You have a new starting quarterback in Minnesota. You have a team missing both of its coordinators in Detroit. All these teams have different problems. They're different than your problems, but you got to find a way to take advantage of their problems in a better way than they take advantage of your problems. So, in my opinion, six is a good number. I would say seven.
Okay.
And it's more so, regardless of how they start, they need to have more wins than losses in the back eight. I don't know if you've seen the back eight. It's not easy. But they got to have, or you know what? Strike that. 500 in the back eight.
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Let's say you Addendum. Guys went on a 18-week coma. You guys were in an 18-week coma. You wake up at the end of the year. You find out the Chicago Bears are in the playoffs. Are you surprised?
You know what? I'm not blown away. I'm not. I mean, like, yeah, surprised. Yes, a little bit surprised, of course. Based on everything that we've seen, everything we know, I would be a little surprised, but not blown away.
I would not be surprised just because of the nature of the division and so many teams have so many question marks. I will be a lot less surprised if they start out 2-2 than if they start out 1-3. I know that's just one game, but I think it makes all the difference, especially going into that bye week, to know exactly where you are, what progress have you made from game one to game four, and then, of course, how you play out of the bye in that big game against Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. The first 4 to 5 games are going to set this whole thing up. They're going to be out of the playoff race possibly by week five. That's where it is. You've got to find a way to be at least 2-3 after 5 weeks. If you're not 2-3, ain't no way. Because that two-city tandem on the road,
Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cincinnati.
Come on, man.
You think they're going to get swept in that
I don't think they're necessarily going to get
swept.
They're
going to win one of those games. They're going to win one of those games.
I can't wait to get to that point in the season and see if you still feel the same way.
If we're all high on Ben Johnson, he's got a game plan away to beat one of those two teams. They've got to. Got to
have a coach.
That's right.
Five on it. Number four.
Transitioning to Cubs, Colin Ray goes against the Giants today. Are you a believer?
Am I a believer in Colin Ray? You know what? I have been so pained by this question because I've been the one that advocated when the starters got healthy, being Javier Assad, that is, that and Jameson Taillon, that he needed to go back into a bullpen swingman role. But all this man does is go out there and give you a chance to win. He hasn't given up more than 2 runs in any of his last 4 starts. They need him today just so they can bounce back and not lose the series against the Giants. And I'm not a believer in Colin Ray long term, but I'm a believer in Colin Ray in the moment. He's been a guy who has just simply been able to keep you around. And that's what a fifth starter should be on most staffs, even the best teams, teams going to the playoffs. The fifth starter is rarely a world beater. Colin Ray has not been a world beater, but he has certainly beaten whatever the expectations were for his season to start. So, yes, I'm a believer in Colin Ray in this role as a fifth starter.
Does it kind of blow you away when you – I know none of us likes wins anymore, but he's 10-5 with a 3.96 ERA, which – you're right. That's outstanding for a fifth starter.
He's got the lowest ERA he's had at any point in his 7-year career.
Yeah, that looks good. Like, I mean, look at that. You're like, yeah, if you didn't know anything about him or his age or anything, you'd be like, yeah, I'd sign that guy as my third or fourth starter in a rotation. So, yeah, again, relative to fifth starter. And you're right. You don't want that guy being necessarily starting games
in the playoffs.
In the postseason. Right. I mean, I wouldn't be afraid of him coming out of the bullpen if he's on the playoff roster. So yeah. Now, his last game against Milwaukee, they did win his game, but he got away with 5 walks. Against the crew.
Or he pitched around 5 walks. He navigated having runners on the base paths.
Man, boy, you are really being nice there. Navigating 5 walks?
He gave up 2 runs.
I know.
If you go 5 2/3 and you only give up 2 runs, walk 8 guys.
That's a stressful way to go through life, though, man. And he's a veteran. I don't believe that Colin Ray is out here conceding bases. I don't think. But your guy, you know, We talked about Javier Saad. Javier Saad was really good in his, and I've been hard on him, man.
For no reason, also.
Well, just because, here's why I'm hard on Javier Saad, and maybe this isn't fair because we had a pitcher here who was one of the greatest Cubs ever in Kyle Hendricks who didn't have velocity. I just get scared when, and the type of pitcher Assad is, he is a get in trouble. Get in a lot of trouble
and then
gets out of it, but it always feels lucky, and he wasn't getting away with it in his first start back, that's for sure, but he was good. I don't dislike Javier Assad, he just makes me nervous. But 6 innings, 1 run, 2 hits, 72 pitches in the 3-2 win over the Angels on Friday, so good for Javier.
Five on it. Number five.
Last question here on Five on It. It's always a life question. Yesterday's you guys helped me get jacked, so I have another hobby that I want to pick up. And here's the question. What's the number one life skill you need to learn before you kick the bucket? Mark Grody, Marshall Harris.
Funny, I was thinking about this just yesterday without even knowing that this would be one of the questions. Yesterday was Tuesday, right?
Yes.
So I do a little bit of extra work outside of the building. I work at a hospital, and a lot of my patients, I have patients, my patients are Spanish. And I took 2 years of Spanish in high school. I retained a decent amount of it, but I want to learn the whole language. I want to get that Rosetta Stone thing, and I want to be able to speak Spanish fluently. So that is that a life skill?
Yeah, 100% to learn a language.
That's to learn a language.
So I would like to learn Spanish and be able to communicate in that language at all times. So that is exactly what I would like to be able to do.
Let me tell you something. Yours folds in perfectly to what I'm about to say because it's definitely under the umbrella. The number one life skill you need to learn before you kick the bucket is learn how to connect with people.
What?
Learn how to connect with people.
Are you taking shots at Robbie's, Tyler and Robbie's generation right now?
No. Listen to what I'm saying. Okay. This is...
How do I reach?
Regardless of age. I know people older than me.
Call somebody?
Connect with people. When I say connect with people, understand where they're coming from. Understanding that you have to have a certain level of emotional intelligence to be able to empathize with others, because I think empathy is something that's been on life support for a while here.
Yeah.
Learn to understand the value of community. And that's really what this is. You know, my dad told me when I was, I think, like 12 or 13 years old, he's like, listen, you know, and it's kind of a variation of the people won't remember you, like who you are, and they won't remember your titles, but they always remember how you made them feel. My dad told me the only thing that matters, not whether you have money or not, not whether you amassed all these riches, like your relationships are the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
Relationships are the only thing that matters. So you just have to learn how to connect with people to make sure that you have valid relationships in your life with whoever, with strangers, with family, with friends. Make sure you can make yourself available. Make sure you can anticipate the needs of the people closest to you and try to make the world a better place by connecting with others. If you can't connect with others, It's gonna be a tough run.
You guys feel good about yourselves now for making fun of Marshall?
Yeah,
you guys feel all right now?
Well,
after
mine's
that?
The piano, so not as important as.
By the way,
stop asking these live questions.
By the way,
I want live answers.
Marshall, real quick, beautifully said. Honestly, like earnestly, I have nothing else to say. Robbie and Tyler, what are life skills?
Yeah,
I want to know.
The piano, I need to learn how to learn the piano. I've never done a cartwheel in my life. Kind of want to learn how to do a cartwheel.
Well, if you get jacked and go to yoga as well, you'll be doing cartwheels in no time.
My niece does cartwheels, and she did the splits recently, and she broke her butt. Tyler, what's yours?
Baby T wants to take everybody's life lessons into hand. I don't have one myself.
So learning is a life lesson.
Learning, I think that's learning for everybody.
Perfect.
Third person, baby T.
Yeah, I was not expecting
the
third
person.
What does
Tyler want?
Oh, man. Is that it? Is that it for
yeah,
Five
that's
on
it.
Five on It? Let's see what we have coming up next. Oh, we have Caitlin Sharkey coming up next from GN Sports, from WGN TV. Caitlin Sharkey to talk about the Chicago Bears. She spends a lot of time out at Hallis Hall, so she's always got great insight. Don't be Anthony Heron. Don't be singing while I'm talking here. Do you know I've had to straighten him out?
It's called background music.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just so used to being traumatized by Big Ant. He's Marshall Harris. I'm Mark Rohde. I'm in for Layla on the Raheem and Harris Show on The Score.
The Score!
This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
Marshall is feeling really good about the Cubs.
It's not that I'm feeling good about the Cubs. It's that all of you should be feeling good about the Cubs. The Cubs are ready to make a run. The Cubs are 5 games back from the best record in baseball, which just happens to belong to the Milwaukee Brewers in their division. They're going to catch the Brewers. And the journey has begun. We are talking about it here on Raheem and Harris, Russell Dorsey in for Layla. Broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we got to talk about how the Cubs got here. They are the hottest team in baseball. Yes, you heard me right. They have won 6 of their last 7, 8 of their last 10. No other team in baseball has 8 wins in their last 10 games. They're the hottest team in baseball, Russ.
Yeah.
And they're set to keep it up because of who's on the schedule, with the Giants for 3, with the Rockies for 3, although you just warned us about taking anything for granted. And I'm looking at that Wednesday matchup at Oracle Park, a little, not scared, but a little concerned, because Colin Ray is going up against Carson Wisenhunt. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who's Carson Wisenhunt? And you answered that question in the break by saying Carson Wisenhunt is who?
It's one of the Giants' top prospects.
And which arm does he throw with?
The left one.
That's been a problem for the Cubs throughout this season.
A little bit.
So you can understand that and the juxtaposition of Colin Ray, who is somehow, some way, a 10-5 pitcher who, just when I think he's been overexposed, finds a way to keep the Cubs in the game and help them get a win.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, was a while there where, I think it was before the All-Star break, when we were talking about the rotation and, oh, what could the Cubs add? And we're talking about what they had on their staff already, and Colin Ray was brought up. And we both looked at each other like, do you want to overexpose Colin Ray? But to his credit, he's come out there, he's pitched well in whatever role that they've asked him to pitch in, and they've been very successful in when he's taken the ball. So I'm still a believer in you don't want to overexpose him. But I do think that's a valuable piece to have when you're talking about a guy that can pitch in bulk, can take a start for you when you need, especially in the postseason, what we've seen the postseason become, where it's like, all right, maybe the matchup, we start pitcher X, give him 3 or 4, and then have Colin Ray be our bulk guy for 2 or 3 innings, whatever you feel is necessary. And I know teams view it an out. So I was going to say, if you say, let's have Colin Ray get us 12 to 15 outs, then you feel really good about where you are getting into the back end of your bullpen.
Craig Counsell, real big on out-getters. That's the thing he loves to use. And I completely agree with him, because of the way that baseball has changed and the fact that last postseason, 52% of the innings were pitched by relievers, not starters. That's more than half. First time that's ever happened in Major League Baseball history. So that's a matchup to keep your eye on. Wisenhunt, Ray, tomorrow. Tonight, it's Verlander against the father who stepped up, Matthew Boyd. The Cubs take on the Giants in San Francisco. Pre-game coverage begins at 8:10. You're going to have to stay up till 8:45 for first pitch on the Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Okay, Kyle Tucker's hitting again. 5 for 12, 3 home runs, 7 RBI in the series sweep against the Angels. Mm-hmm. He is out of his funk. Yesterday on the show, Russell, we declared he is officially back. Other guys, I don't know if they're back yet. Seiya Suzuki doesn't seem to be back yet.
No.
PCA doesn't seem to be back yet. And you wanted to put a bit of a microscope or magnifying glass, whatever, binoculars, however you see things closer, on the fact that Kyle Tucker's been getting a lot of heat in this town.
Lots of heat.
But other guys have been kind of escaping said fire.
Yeah.
Who are you speaking of specifically?
You set it up like a shot. I don't like that. So you're right. I think Kyle Tucker, and rightfully so, has taken a lot of heat, right? He had been ice cold. He had not looked like himself. And when you're the big dog, that's what comes with that. That's what comes with being the big dog. When you get all the praise for carrying teams for weeks at a time, that comes with it when you don't perform. I also understand that I think people hold Kyle Tucker in a different regard because, one, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. 2, he's expected to make a boatload of money. 3, they traded for said Kyle Tucker, and you trade up a guy in Cam Smith who's going to be in Houston for the next 6 years, and then also Hayden Wisniewski. Now, Hayden
Wisniewski. And Isaac Paredes.
Right, and Isaac Paredes. Two of those guys out for the year. Cam Smith has performed at times, but also there have been times where he has not performed. So sometimes I don't want people to look at it through that lens, because there is no perfect thing where you could say, hey, this is, we traded this guy and then Cam Smith is going to be here and an all-star. You don't know that. Like, you don't know what you don't know.
No, I agree with that completely.
We had never seen Cam Smith in the big leagues before. You don't know what that guy, player X, is going to become. But for all the heat that Kyle Tucker has taken, I don't feel like in this city that Pete Crow Armstrong has gotten the same, what's the word?
Not even smoke.
Smoke, no. And has been worse. PCA, in the month of August, slash line 156, 212, 234. One homer, the homer he hit in LA. Big homer.
Big homer, though.
Big homer, but that was the only, this is the first homer he had hit in the month of August. Three walks with a 29% strikeout rate.
That seems high.
The highest strikeout rate in baseball is 31%. So he's near the top just this month in strikeout rate. And I think PCA has the benefit of young guy, made the crazy splash, the breakout player in Major League Baseball because of what he does defensively. He's exciting. I think he gets some protection because of that. And that's not a knock against PCA. But also, the numbers are worse than Tucker and worse than, say, a Suzuki. Now, as a collective, all those guys have to be better. For the Cubs to get where they want to go, PCA, say, a Suzuki, Kyle Tucker have to hit.
And you could argue Ian Happ as well. The entire outfield, all four of them.
They have to hit. Because that was the strength that you made all your decisions at the deadline on, right? We're not going to make a ton of starting rotation moves because we're the best offense of baseball and we're going to hit. And then what happened? They didn't hit. On the contrary, the pitching has been fantastic.
Otherworldly.
I did not expect that. You did not expect that. Cubs fans did not expect that. And so if the starting pitching, who you've asked all season, hey, got to step it up. Guys have stepped it up. Imanaga and Boyd have been fantastic. Cade Horton is pitching his way into NL Rookie of the Year. Jameson Taillon, if he's going to pitch the way he pitched against the Milwaukee Brewers last week, you have good problems when you're talking about who's going to start for you in the postseason. But if those guys have to squeeze the ball tighter because it's like, we're only going to get one run tonight, we're only going to get two runs tonight, that's not a good place to be in.
It's not a good place to be, but when you talk about the postseason, Russ, let's be honest. That's what separates the teams that advance in the postseason from the ones who not, is that you get the clutch pitching. You get a guy on the mound who could throw zeros, or maybe a one, but zeros. And offensively, you're going to be facing the best pitching you've seen all season long. Mm-hmm. And so the margin for error for all these teams in the postseason, I'm not just talking about the Cubs. I'm talking about whether you're the Cubs or a hard, fast-charging Reds team, or the Tigers, or a Red Sox team that gets hot, it all goes to nothing if you can't be hit clutch with your hitting and also throw up a whole bunch of zeros in the postseason. I don't see a lot of postseason games 11-8. I see a lot of 4-2, 3-1, 2-1. Whew.
And you know, with that, if I'm winning a 4-3 game, you know what I need to do? I need to be able to get on base. A 212 on-base percentage for PCA, that ain't going to cut it. Tucker, 278, and he's a guy that historically has gotten on base at a higher clip. That's not going to cut it. Say Suzuki, a 344 on base, you'll take that. But there is no slug there, and the average is not there at all. You can't, when you are a team that is built to just slug, when you're not slugging, but you're also not getting on base, you do not score runs. And I think people have seen, okay, this is a team that maybe got power happy. They're hitting the ball at the ballpark. People are saying, oh, PCA is going to be a 40-40 guy. And then you have the power outage. And when you have the power outage and you don't get on base, it makes the lows feel very low, like we've seen.
This segment brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. talking with Russell Dorsey about the Cubs as they are hard charging towards first place in the NL Central. Yeah, you heard me right. They were down 9 games at the start of last week. By the end of the week, they had cut 4 games off the division lead and are only 4 games back now of having one of the best records in baseball, 5.5 back of that top record in baseball when you talk about the Brewers. I am resigned that the Cubs are going to catch the Brewers. Russell, yes or no, are you with me?
I want to be with you. I've thought about it all morning since we talked about it originally. I think they get to a game back. But I think that's the closest they get. I don't think they win the division. But I think they get to a game.
Forget about winning the division. Yeah. Do you think at any point they will tie them in the standings?
No.
Okay.
No.
But a game back?
A game
that's
back.
Why a game back? Why not they get close? But you made it very specific with that game.
Because the Brewers, to me, they just haven't been that team that will go on the stretch for you to get that close to them. Right? Because now you're at a point in the schedule where 5.5 games back going into September, that's a good chunk of games. And so now you're in a point where you have to win as the Cubs and they have to lose. How many nights, and we'll just say in September, are you going to say the Brewers lose and you win? Because there might be some nights where the Brewers win and you lose. And now you're trying to play the catch-up game.
No, I think they'll win enough to catch them. I just think they'll win enough to catch them.
What makes you believe that?
Because they've got the Giants and the Rockies, and they're going to win 4 or 5 or maybe even 6 of the next games, and they're going to be 2 to 3 games out, if maybe 1 to 2 games out by
the
end of next week.
There's an assumption in your point there. You're assuming that
the Brewers are going to lose
yes.
games? The Brewers are not. So I think the Brewers are going to go 500 at best against the Blue Jays and the Phillies, who they have back-to-back series against. That means they could take 2 or 3 from one of them and lose 2 or 3. Those are two things that very well I expect to happen. Like, it could happen. It's not, that's well within the realm of possibility. Would you agree with that? Split with the
sure. Blue Jays, like, I think the Blue Jays are as good as anybody in the American League.
Exactly. So
I think the Phillies are a World Series contender. So yeah, I think that's fair.
That's where the end of next week is where most of this ground is going to be made up. And then we're talking about a team that's 2 to 3 games out. And once you're talking about a team that's 2 to 3 games out, now, yes, what you said about September is true, but you don't need it to happen nearly as much as you do when they're 5.5 or 5 games back.
You can't have slip-ups at this point in the season. The Braves come in here, and then the Nats come in here.
6 games against the Braves, you better win 5 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it.
That team still has Ronald Acuña Jr. I'm just giving you out
Jerks and Profar is a problem.
Right.
They have guys. I'm aware of that. I just saw the White Sox just played them and couldn't get it done, even though they were scoring all the runs.
A lot of runs.
So the Cubs are scoring all the runs.
Sox, by the way, they can bang a little bit.
A little bit.
I don't know if people have been paying attention.
A little bit.
They like to swing it.
15 runs the last 2 games. Big in-division wins. One against a team you're saying, well, that's not really a major league roster. The 8-0 win against the Twins. But they come back against the Royals and they're like, oh, y'all want to go to the playoffs? Watch this. I love that.
It's playing spoiler.
I love playing
spoiler. I think that's
spoilers.
Big for a young team.
But back to the PCA talk, because a lot of texters weighing in here.
And we appreciate that.
And you can, obviously, anytime you want, let us know what you think on the text line, 312-644-6767. The reason PCA, this is from 630,
mm-hmm.
The reason PCA doesn't get as much flack is that he's a second-year player on a cheap team-controlled deal, and his defense and base running is elite. If you think PCA...
The base running
is a well, he's had some base running issues.
Okay.
If you think PCA is a blanket 30-homer player, you have really dumb expectations. It's not just his profile. He has outperformed this season, so regression should be expected, and just be happy with what you've gotten so far. That's one of the... There's many, many of these.
All right,
texts
I
want
to respond
that
to that one
sentiment.
First. You can't be happy with what you've gotten so far when what I've gotten lately, which is most important, is 156, 212, 234. Because if I'm trying to catch the Milwaukee Brewers, as you point out, Marshall Harris, I need better than that from the guy I have hitting the cleanup spot. I need better than 186, 278, 329 from Tucker, 208, 344, 278 from Suzuki. Like, I don't want to pin it on one guy. We were talking about PCA specifically, so I got specific there. But I agree with many of the texters that say it's them as a collective, right? It can't just be Michael Bush doing his thing, and then nobody behind him doing anything else. That goes down to Ian Happ and the guys in the middle of that lineup as well. They have to hit as a collective. And so for 3 months of this year, they hit as a collective. And that's why you're the best offense in baseball. But they hadn't hit like a collective in a while.
Reverting to the mean, that is how it will happen. Other than PCA, the veterans usually revert to the mean. That's from 630. Better question, because you said something that I don't necessarily agree with. You're talking about built to slug. I think the Cubs are built to score more than just by hitting the ball over the fence or hitting doubles into the gap.
They were.
I think they still are. Here's why. I've been wrestling with this and protesting this all season long. Why is Matt Shaw still batting ninth? I don't think he should bat ninth. He should bat higher because a whole lot of guys aren't doing anything, and Matt Shaw is doing things. Here's one of the reasons why I believe Matt Shaw is still batting ninth. Not just to keep him in a place where he's comfortable, but he has literally proven that he is the second fastest guy on this team. He is a second leadoff man, if you will, or really the leadoff man. When you put Michael Bush leading off in the order, because he doesn't have speed, and Shaw gets on, he could steal a bag. He can take extra bases. And I think with him in an ideal lineup, Nico Hoerner or Ian Happ batting leadoff, you're creating situations where guys can make things happen on the base paths.
Okay, I don't disagree with your point because he has played so well in the second half. But when you start doing the let's move guys around, you can't move everybody.
No, I'm okay with him staying ninth now because I'm like, at least when they're not slugging.
Would you have moved Tucker down by now? Would you have moved PCA down by now?
I would have moved Tucker down a few weeks ago, just down in the lineup.
Would you move PCA today?
PCA, you can bat him sixth. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I'm okay with that because he doesn't get on base at a high clip. I was always
That's my big thing there.
I was always on the train of stop talking about PCA batting leadoff. It's dumb. It's a dumb idea.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea.
It's a dumb idea.
It's not a good
idea. PCA should never bat leadoff. I know what his batter profile is. I know what he likes to chase. You need guy who, number one, yes, he has the speed to bat leadoff, but he's got to be able to get on base.
A sub 300 on base guy should never lead off for a baseball
game. This is just basic math. And so I just look at it like this. Craig Counsell is getting paid a lot of money to do what he does. Mm-hmm. They are in position to go to the playoffs. They may be in position by the end of next week to challenge for the division title. I can't be mad at all the ebbs and flows of 162 games without acknowledging the greater good.
Yeah.
And right now, the Cubs, more good than bad.
Welcome back. Lofted to the back of the end zone. No struggles today. A second touchdown. This one to Robinson. And that is Allen Robinson's first touchdown as a Chicago Bear.
Third down. First quarter winding down. Trubisky. Robinson. Allen Robinson, touchdown Bears.
From the 22-yard line now, Trubisky stepping up. Fires down the sideline. Robinson makes the catch.
Pulls to the end zone. He's got a man. And caught for the touchdown, Robinson.
Well, it's man coverage. This time, Marshawn Lattimore is on Allen Robinson. A really good route at the top. He sticks it to the post. Yeah, I saw that in real time. It looked like, did he have it? And that's a nice job.
Allen Robinson left a real nice legacy in Chicago. Simply put, one of the best wide receivers in Bears history. A couple thousand-yard seasons while he was here. As we welcome you back into the Rahimi and Harris Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am Mark Grody, filling in for Layla Rahimi today. And it is a pleasure to be joined by A-Rob, Allen Robinson, who did play with the Bears from 2018 to 2021. Had great chemistry with Mitch Trubisky. He is also the host of the Press Release Podcast. So he's out here podcasting as well. And maybe selfishly, most importantly to me, he was a winner of the Media Good Guy Award for dealing with us, the Bears media, in a very cordial and complimenting way. Allen Robinson joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Hey, Allen Robinson, what's going on, man? It's a pleasure to have you on The Score.
How you doing, man? It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, no, we, Marshall and I, have been pumped up to talk to you. I do want to talk a little bit about you right now. I mean, you've had a long, great NFL career, over a decade now, 11 years. You were with Detroit last year. What's cooking, man? What are you up to now? Are you still thinking about, are you still wanting to get out there and hook up with an NFL team?
Definitely. You know, that's always a possibility for myself. You know, again, I'm in phenomenal shape. Again, so, you know, if the right opportunity presents itself, you know, then I'll be all for it. But at the same time, you know, again, based on what I've done in my career, the places that I've been, you know, I feel good about where everything is at, you know. So, again, if the right opportunity presents itself, you know, I'll be ready. But, you know, ultimately, you know, doing some media stuff, you know, I have a press release podcast. Go follow us on Instagram and on YouTube. So me and Prince Amukamara, actually, he spent some time in Chicago as well. You know, so we have a podcast going and we're excited to start up as week one approaches, you know, to be able to talk some funny locker room stories and just to kind of talk about, you know, week to week, what it's like in the landscape of the NFL.
That's awesome, man. As it just so happens, Alan, tomorrow, Dan Weeder and I, we host the Take the North podcast, which we loved having you on recently. Prince Amukamara going to be on the show tomorrow, man.
Oh, okay, so you got both sides of the podcast.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, we got the dueling. Did you go up against, I don't remember, did you go up against him in practice or did Kyle Fuller have your attention during those practices back in the day?
Both. Kyle, yeah. And Prince. You know, Prince was a press guy, so I always like to get a lot of work against him. You know, me and Prince also played with each other in Jacksonville as well. You know, so we had a lot of experience of each other for the time in Jacksonville. So once I got to Chicago, you know, he was a familiar face, you know, so we definitely got some one-on-one reps during training camp as well.
Okay, so Alan, because this is a podcast that you guys are doing, you and Prince, and you're going to have some behind-the-scenes stories, giving us some insight, I want, for our audience, your best Ben Johnson locker room story that you can share with us, because I really think people want to get some insight into their new head coach.
Man, Ben, now, funny locker room stories, I don't know about any funny, man. Ben is a pretty serious locked-in dude, you know, and he's like that constantly. You know, Ben, every blue moon, you know, Ben a crack one of those kind of evil smiles, if you will, you know, but kind of the best experience that I have and that I can remember, and we kind of saw a little bit in preseason, is, you know, when you see guys rolling and when Ben Johnson's teams, for us, it was the offense playing well. When you see Ben Johnson flexing on the sideline, you know, it's a good Sunday. You know, for us, I specifically remember Seattle Seahawks game. I think they brought a blitz zero and we had some sort of a deep cross concept called and we scored. It was like a 70-yard touchdown to Jamison Williamson. And, you know, Ben was flexing hard, man. And that was pretty early in the season. So I was not, you know, I had just kind of got to Chicago. And seeing that energy from Ben on the sideline as a coordinator, to see how serious he took those chess matches versus defensive coordinators, man, it was phenomenal and truly awesome to see, man, to have a coach who's that locked in, you know, very similar to a player. You know, you see a player get a first down, get a touchdown, they do their celebrations. You know, when Ben Johnson's dialing up, you know, some blitz zero beaters and some beaters on third down, man, he gets pretty turned up and it's pretty exciting to see as a player.
Okay, I love that you said that, because here's what we've been getting from the Bears players, Alan, this sense that they don't almost know what to make of Ben Johnson because he is so serious. So he doesn't really crack the jokes and he is serious as you're describing. Is he scary? Because they're making him sound kind of scary.
Listen, man, Ben is one of those guys, you know, he's kind of like Dr. Jekyll's a little bit, you know. You know, he has that kind of mad scientist feel to him. But I'll say this, you know, for those guys, and you can kind of see and hear in the media as well, man, as those guys are, you know, I don't even want to say coming around to Ben, but as they continue to learn and understand Ben, man, you have such a great appreciation with, you know, because he pushes the guys extremely hard, man. But, you know, many different instances last season, what I see him, you know, love up the players, you know, if it's, you know, something that may not go right, or, you know, him having to, you know, stay after to talk to guys, you know, Ben also has that ability and has that connection for his players, you know, because when you get into a meeting after game day. Just as much as I saw Ben tell us that we have to play better as a group, I've also saw Ben after the Tampa Bay game last year in Detroit. You know, Ben said that he didn't feel like he had a big enough plan for us going into the red zone in Tampa game. And he said, you know, he told us as players, you know, I'll take full accountability for that, and that will never happen again. You know, so when you have a coach who not only holds his players to such a high standard, but also himself to such a high standard as a player, man, you can't do anything except respect it to the ultimate, you know, amount, just as far as, you know, him as a coach. You know, he's a much respected coach.
Let me ask you this. We're talking to former Bears wide receiver Allen Robinson. He is the host of the Press Release podcast. Go seek it out. Give it a listen. He does it with Prince Abukamara, both part of what was really just a great 2018 season until it wasn't a great 2018 season. And we might get a little bit nostalgic on that here in just a little bit. Or we could do it right now if you'd like.
Sounds like you want to do it right now.
Even when you say that, you know, whenever I hear a 2018, I literally hear of two thuds.
Man.
Listen.
Good job, Grody.
It's so funny. Whenever I hear that sound of a kick hitting the upright, for whatever reason, I think of that game in particular, because it was just, the stadium was almost silent. Obviously, it's the last play of the game. You know, it's a game-winning moment, so the stadium is silent. And when you hear a cold football hit the crossbar, you know, it's such a loud sound.
It's like almost, boing, boing, boing.
Literally. Granted, it's not as loud as lightning, but it has the same weight in it. You know, as far as thunder, excuse me, it's not the same sound as thunder, you know, but it has the same weight when you hear that bar, when you hear that ball hit the bar in that moment, and then hit the crossbar. So
it was
I apologize for Mark. He likes to invite guests on and traumatize them.
I feel like Allen needed to talk about this. Okay. I feel like this is a therapy session here right now. Because honestly, Allen, that's every single Bears fan. There was a preseason game last week where Cairo Santos hit the bar and everybody's tweeting doink, 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 doink. Not double doink, literally. But it was just doink. So there is a certain trauma that has been instilled in Bears fans. And obviously, it's still in you. Dude, I was covering the sidelines for you guys, Allen. So I was down there. It was just like you guys were just frozen. Like nobody really said anything. Because there's you're powerless. You're so powerless over the moment with 64,000 fans jacked up. Everybody thinking the Bears are going to advance onto the second round of the playoffs, and then that happens. It was harsh, man.
Definitely. No, obviously, playing my career. You know, 4 years in Chicago, but you know, I do feel that myself and the fans, you know, we are a little bit trauma bonded, you know, from yes. just some of those experience, you know, that one in particular.
Trauma bond. I mean, there's one more question about 2018 or that era, and then we'll move on to the now. We'll talk about the Bears wide receivers with you, more on Ben Johnson, but the last question that I will ask you about is Mitch Trubisky, because you did have unbelievable chemistry with Trubisky. What happened, and do you think he got a fair chance in Chicago?
You know, fair, I would say nothing in the league as far as opportunities are fair, you know, across the board, you know, so that's so tough to say. You know, if you're coming into the NFL and expecting a fair opportunity or fair anything, you know, if you will, then you're doing yourself a disservice. But do I think that he should have gained, you know, enough leash to maybe have another year? I would say so, you know, and I would say I think something that Mitch did very well was Mitch had the communication and Mitch had the chemistry with the players as a group. You know, going into my last year in Chicago, you know, I do think that, you know, Mitch had the room as far as having the connection with Tariq Cohen, having the connection with Anthony Miller and myself and some other guys, you know, David Montgomery, Cole Kmet. You know, we had the chemistry to whereas, you know, another offseason may have been able for us to improve that much more to be able to, you know, get to the playoffs again and maybe actually make some noise in the playoffs. Because for us, it wasn't that we were trying to become a team that's, you know, trying to get into the playoffs. We were, you know, we made the playoffs two times in those 4 years, 3 years with Mitch, two times in 3 years. So for us, it just was about now making some noise in the playoffs. And I think having another offseason under our belt, you know, I think that would have been more of a possibility, you know, rather than kind of starting over, and there was a lot of moving parts.
Allen Robinson joining us here on the Raheem and Harris Show with Mark Grody and for later the 11-year NFL wide receiver, of course, spending time with the Bears. As Grody so accurately pointed out, from 2018 to 2021, I'm so curious as to your thoughts on the Bears receiver room right now, because I'm just trying to figure out, there's only one football, Allen, who's getting the ball and how much when you talk about all the talent they have in that receiving room right now, plus the tight ends, of course.
You know, the number one thing for that entire offense, really this year, a theme will probably be sacrifice. You know, and again, I saw that a lot in Detroit last year with the amount of weapons that we had in Detroit. Obviously, Jameson Williams could have got the ball more. Jahmyr Gibbs could have got the ball more. David Montgomery could have got the ball more. Sam Laporta could have got the ball more. But when you have those are good problems to have, you know, and I think that Chicago, with some of the weapons that they have, you know, Cole Kmet, you know, drafting a rookie tight end who's very talented, you know, bringing in Luther Burden, who's another talented rookie, but also having Olamide Zaccheaus and DJ Moore, you know, Rome Odunze, you know, having such a deep skill position group, you know, guys can't get frustrated and guys have to keep the main thing, which is being able to win games, because they all will have the opportunities. But there will be instances and matchups and games where somebody may get the short end of the stick when it comes to targets and opportunities. But, you know, you have to stay locked in, because when you're in a situation and you have Ben Johnson as your coach, a guy who's coming in, you know, wanting and hoping to take this team to the next level, you're looking to play, you know, 20 plus games this season. So you have to be ready to mentally be along for the ride, have that mental mental stamina as you go throughout the course of the season. You know, you have to ride the ebbs and flows of, you know, opportunity and always stay ready for yours.
I know there's no way you could have seen the full you know, work put in last year by Caleb Williams in all 17 games, but you did see him close up at least in a couple of games against Detroit. What do you think of Caleb Williams, and can he still be a great quarterback in the NFL?
Definitely. You know, again, for whatever reason, you know, and I think that it's a little bit tough because it's the city of Chicago and they haven't had that, you know, guy come in and have that first year success. When I say first year success, I mean very, very high success, like a Jaden Daniels. But I don't think that people should, you know, be at all down on the rookie season that he had. You know, he has some ebbs and flows, did a lot of good things, you know, did a lot of things that need improvement as well. But when it comes to just being a rookie, you know, having some of the moving parts, obviously him learning some different things. I believe they made a coordinator change. You know, obviously it, you know, they fired a coach and so on and so forth. So, you know, doing different things like that throughout the course of the season is always tough, you know. So with what he had to take on, you know, I don't think that Bears fans should be discouraged at all. You know, again, it's a rookie season. You know, he has to grow. He has to learn. He has to continue to polish his game to figure out, okay, after you go back after a rookie season and evaluate your own film, what were my strengths this year? What were my weaknesses? What are things that I have to totally get rid of? And having a whole course of an offseason to be able to evaluate that, you know, I think should be extremely encouraging for Bears fans, seeing, you know, just what he was able to do last year in a pretty revolving door kind of situation when it came to things that were moving within the organization.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think this quarterback is in the best position that a Bears quarterback has been in a long time to be developed, because of the coaching staff, because of the players around him as well. But Allen, you're obviously very well aware of Bears history and the quarterbacks. I mean, you kind of indicated it in your answer there. Do you have a theory on why quarterback play has just been so good? Quarterback play has just been so hard to come by in the city of Chicago. Do you have a theory?
I don't have a theory, you know, but to be honest, man, quarterback, sometimes that position is hard for a lot of different cases. You know, as a person who grew up a Detroit fan, you know, my entire childhood, you know, was struggles at the quarterback position and other positions, you know, and now obviously they have Jared Goff as their guy and they've been able to have success over the past few years. But you know, before Matthew Stafford, it was Joey Harrington, John Kitna's, you know what I'm saying? So just to kind of give an example, you know, the same again with Minnesota, you know, they were able to kind of get, you know, Brett Favre at that point in time. But once after Dante Culpepper, you know, you had Brad Johnson, Gus Frerotte, you know, you had a lot of different guys. And, you know, it's not always easy to be able to do that. You know, some teams kind of, you know, find a solid, you know, half a decade or so that when they get a guy to be able to truly compete and contend, you know. But, you know, I think the Bears, where they're at right now, you know, is in a very good position. Obviously, they have a very high touted quarterback that they drafted a year ago, who's now going into his second year. And, you know, even and he's a Cali kid, you know, so even as he kind of, you know, playing in Cali and coming from USC, yeah, you know, being able to get adjusted to playing in the Midwest and so on and so forth. You know, again, I think it's small tricks of the trade sometime that can take a player to the next level, especially when you're talking about that position.
Alan, I love talking to you. I you know, maybe at some point in time, you and I could just do the full deep dive on 2018 because, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, I'd love to do that. Would love to have you back on the podcast at some point in time. Speaking of podcasts, your podcast, again, Press Release Podcast. Obviously, you guys talk football. I'm guessing you talk NBA on that podcast, too, if I know you like I think I know you.
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot of stuff. You know, we talk a lot of stories. You know, like you just kind of hinted at, I'm a big NBA guy.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm very excited for this season. You know, and for myself, you know, now that, you know, I've had a little bit more time over this offseason, you know, again, I'm a big sports guy in general. You know, I love going to basketball games, baseball games. I'm excited, you know, as we kind of approach September and towards the end of September, I'm excited for October baseball. You know, so, you know, for me, I'm a sports guy. You know, I grew up playing basketball, baseball, and football. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, kind of those big three of sports, you know, I really enjoy them all. And I enjoy to talk about them all as well.
Hey, Rob, what would you pay Josh Giddey to stay a Chicago Bull? He said he's a basketball guy. No, I want that man's thoughts.
He is.
Listen, in NBA, typically the market speaks, you know. I'm curious to see, man, because, again, I mean, he's a younger guy. You know, he came into the league extremely young as well. You know, it just kind of depends on where the Bulls are going and the direction that they're going in. You know, I believe this year will be a year that the Eastern Conference will be pretty wide open. Obviously, you have Jason Tatum coming off an Achilles injury. You have Dame Lillard, who's not in Milwaukee anymore. You have Tyrese Halliburton, who's coming off of an Achilles injury as well. You know, so if it's any time for some of the teams who want to kind of strike or really improve their team or kind of make a run in the East, I think that it would be this year.
The Press Release Podcast.
Bulls won't be doing that this year, I can tell you that.
And Alan,
listen, I mean, hey, man, Detroit, you know, it was a lot of people that didn't think that they would be where they would be at last year, you know, but they had, obviously, Cade, you know, he took a step and so on and so forth. But, you know, I mean, listen, man, like I said before, I think the Eastern Conference is just one of those conferences that, you know, right now, you just kind of, you never know. You have the Knicks and Cavs, who are heavy favorites at the top of the conference this year with some injuries, obviously Milwaukee as well with Giannis. But as far as, you know, the rest of the conference, you know, I think it's pretty wide open just as far as kind of the positioning and kind of where teams can fall throughout the course of the year.
Alan, just great stuff. Loved having you on. And just know this too. I understand that you're from Detroit. We love Detroit. You played with the Lions last year, which is very cool. I know you played with the Rams. You, sir, will always be a Bear. Do you understand that?
I appreciate that, man. And for myself, man, I always have an extreme and immense amount of love for the city of Chicago. You know, for myself, you know, coming there as a pretty young guy. I think I was 24 years old when I signed there, you know, so I feel like I kind of grew up in Chicago a little bit, you know, and had some of the best years of my career, you know, in Chicago. So I have a ton of love for the city, for the fans, you know, for the Chicago Bears organization.
Alan, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks,
Alan.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yep, there goes Alan Robinson.
Keep listening, by the way, for your chance to win a pair of general admission tickets to Riot Fest on Sunday, September 21st, featuring performances by Green Day, Idols, Bad Religion, Inhaler, and more. And you might even see Mark Grody.
Maybe. No, you know, if you look hard, you probably will find me there. Coming up next here on the Raheemy and Harris Show, we're going to talk Bears overs and unders on the offense. I am looking forward to this. It is Raheemy and Harris with me, Mark Grody, on The Score.